Hey, it's Zach. Before we get to today's pod, I want to mention how in this time of social distancing with no games to watch, it's not just the Low Post podcast that's still churning out content for you. ESPN Podcast is adapting to this new normal and posting fresh content every day. Just this week, there have been new episodes of the ESPN Daily with our friend Mina Kimes, Baseball Tonight, the Woj Pod, you all know Woj, the Hoop Collective, Wendy and Company, the Mina Kimes Show, because Mina's so good she has two shows, Stupidity, The Right Time with Bonani Jones, and Maddie and the Caddy. You can listen to all of these and more wherever you get your podcasts.
And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post podcast live from a house in the suburbs of Connecticut that apparently I now live in for an undetermined period of time because this is just what life is now. And joining me remotely through technology that I don't particularly care to understand is the one and only Rachel Nichols, someone I miss very much, someone I saw on TV with the commissioner, Adam Silver, yesterday. Rachel, how are you doing? How is your family? How's life? Are you stocked up with stuff?
My family is good. I am, of course, worried about all the people we're all worried about and just kind of navigating through the fact that we don't know what the answers are. I'm thinking about like other natural disasters or problems that we've all lived through. For those of us who have not lived through one of, say, the world wars, right, where life just stopped and we didn't know what was going to happen. When you have a hurricane or even a terrible terrorist attack like 9/11, it was about the recovery from that, but it wasn't the certain unknown and sort of the uncertainty we have sprawling through now. So I think for a lot of us, we've never lived through anything like this before.
Have you read the Imperial College of London report on COVID-19?
I have read so many reports, the WHO report, the this report, the that report. You have to refresh me on the Imperial College report. Is that the one with the 18 months?
Yes.
There we go. Then yes, Zach, I've read that. Thanks for bringing it up.
That's the one out of London. And many experts, including experts within the league, had suggested over the last 72 hours that I read it. I resisted because the first paragraph was so harrowing that I could not go on anymore. But my point is they talk about this, like, you know, swine flu and SARS and everything. They talk about this as like, this is the worst one since the flu of 1918. And so anytime you're going back like 100 years to when like the Model T was a novel thing that changed life, you're like, okay, that's where we are, to your point. Like, this is uncharted territory. And so your kids are okay? Do they have school, remote school?
Yeah, so I don't know how many people out there listening have kids who are school age, but I think most of the schools have switched to digital learning, which, you know, how old is Mara now?
Mara, my daughter, just turned 5 a month ago, which seems like about 5 years ago, but yes, she just turned 5.
Right, so for digital kindergarten, what do they do? Because my kids are in third grade, I have twins, and they at least have like math worksheets they can do. What's digital kindergarten?
Well, I mean, this is one of many things that this has been emotionally much harder for me than I thought it would be. And we can talk about some of that, but most of that surrounds my daughter. And actually, I'm working on a story at the very beginning stages of it because, again, we're all navigating this. But I do think the point you just made is true, where like my daughter is in the sweet spot of she's old enough to understand that something is wrong. Something in her life has been disrupted. She can't see her friends. Her school is closed. She misses her teachers. And she's already asking, when are we going to be able to do all those things again? But she's not old enough to like play video games. She's not old enough to have like actual school and actual homework. And I think, although clearly some of this is me projecting my experience onto the world, as we all do, I think that age is a sweet spot of like weird parental challenges. And so I'm tracking down players and coaches who have kids that age, and we're going to all talk about the sort of weird parental challenges of that. So like, yeah, I don't have an answer for that. We have tried to mimic her school in this house we are renting. So like, her school has a writing center and a science center and an art center. So we made those in various corners of the house, and we built a schedule like everyone is supposed to. And yes, we are O for life and following the schedule because she'll have a tantrum or we'll get tired of something, or she wants to watch videos and all that, but we're trying our best. And today her teachers, sent the whole class like a 45-second video of them saying, hello, we miss you. Starting on Monday, we're going to be doing remote learning X, Y, and Z, or at least sending you activities. And the three of us watched it together, and to see how excited my daughter was to see her teachers and how thrilled she was, like, I honestly almost cried out of sadness, though, not happiness, out of sadness, because she's because she realizes something is wrong, but she's happy about it. It was just a whole weird stir of emotions.
Well, I mean, it's funny you talk about the emotional impact and the toll it takes on all of us, and there's anxiety and there's uncertainty. One of the things that I keep trying to do and think about is there are little moments where you are forced to appreciate things in your life in a different way. And people who are facing terminal illnesses talk about this all the time, right? Their appreciation for just going outside, right? If they've been stuck in a hospital for months or something like that, it changes. It changes how you prioritize things you used to maybe take for granted. And those little moments of watching your daughter light up when she sees her kindergarten teacher is probably not something that you really paid attention to when you dropped her off every day. But now, you know, you take that in a little bit differently. And every parent, by the way, your point about, oh, the schedule, no one has stuck to their schedule. And also all of us are sitting there with trapped in the house with the kids being like, ah, give me just 20 seconds where no one's asking me for the third time the same question. But, you know, on the flip side, it is precious time with your kids that you were all slowing down our lives to get. And if there's a way to just block out some of the anxiousness of the uncertainty of what's going on, it's to focus on those little things. I think that's the best I've come up with so far.
Yeah. I mean, look, I realize like I'm extremely lucky to have the ability and the means to like pack up our lives and rent a house in the suburbs of a leafy town in Connecticut.
You should explain to people, by the way, who don't live in New York City, why you've done this.
Well, I mean, for a couple of reasons. Ostensibly, on the surface, you would guess that it's because New York is about to go on lockdown and it's going to be the worst. It's going to be the number one U.S. hotspot just because of the proximity of everybody. And like in a broad sense, that's true. I actually thought we would. I stupidly thought we could just ride it out there. And actually, one of my friends left to go to Maine. And she offered us her apartment as like a second apartment in an office, and it had Wi-Fi. I was like, all right, I'm set. And then, and then more and more of our friends started to leave. And I thought, and my wife was pushing me to look into Airbnbs and stuff. And really what happened was it became clear pretty fast that a 2-bedroom apartment in New York City was not a fair environment for a girl who had just turned 5. She needs to run. She needs to exercise, and you just can't social distance in New York. It's just not possible. So there are a lot of parks in our neighborhood in Long Island City, but you go out and like, you can't tell children how to behave and where to run. And like, there are just too many people. You're within 2 feet of someone immediately. By the way, we live in an elevator building on a high floor. I get in the elevator. Who's in the elevator? Who pressed the elevator buttons? You just can't, it's impossible to do it. So between all those factors, we just decided to look into it. And so now again, I want to make clear, like, I understand we're fortunate. We're lucky. Even so, like, leaving home, like, I thought nothing of it initially. Like, I'm nothing. We're going to get in a car. We're going to leave. But like, that's our home. That's our apartment. Like, that's where my daughter's bedroom is. And like, and leaving that, and like, I don't know when we're going to go back. Like, I think June is like optimistic to go back. And like, it was more difficult for me than all of this has been more difficult for me than I thought it was going to be, frankly.
Yeah. And there's so many questions too for people who are on hourly wages, right? My brother works at a restaurant. That restaurant is closed down, right? They're not even doing takeout. They are closed down. They're in San Francisco, one of the original hotspots in the U.S. And, you know, how long can employees get paid there? It's not going to be indefinite. And there's so many other Americans who are in that situation right now. Even people who would consider themselves to be very fortunate and have steady jobs, right? Not people who would say, oh gosh, you know, I'm living from paycheck to paycheck, but how many people are living in a way that six months of paychecks they can cushion? I mean, I think that most Americans, the numbers are that we don't, as a country, live that way. So I think that even people who consider themselves fortunate in the grand scheme, there's going to be a lot of big questions like that coming up. And I keep, you know, when people are like, oh, you're still doing a basketball show, because I was in the office today, we're doing The Jump, and we're all social distancing. I should make that clear. I sat 6 feet apart from Matt Barnes, who was 6 feet from Paul Pierce. But, you know, part of it is that sports is in some ways a reflection and a lens for all of this and a way to talk about stuff, right? So we're talking about testing. And the controversy in New York, especially over who's got tests, who has access to tests, how many tests are there, is sort of broader. And you're dealing with a lot of nameless, faceless people that that doctors are trying to sort of have hit home with people. Then all of a sudden when you're talking about, hey, here are the Brooklyn Nets and here are four players who tested positive and here is one of them is Kevin Durant. And then there is Mayor de Blasio saying, hey, it's not fair that the whole Nets team got tested. It should only be the people who were sick. And then there is Adam Silver and Michelle Roberts coming back and saying, hey, the government is saying that if you've been exposed and these people were exposed, they should be tested to help stop the spread of the disease. Maybe it's the government's fault that there aren't enough tests, and kind of putting that pressure back on. And I think that having those specifics, even the trivial conversations of when does basketball come back, gives people a little bit of a marker and a handle to talk about the bigger things of when American life comes back. That's my guess.
I think you can scratch the maybe from the maybe it's the government's fault part of your sentence there. But, well, you know, the testing thing is interesting. You know, I guess, I mean, NBA players are privileged. That's the reality of it. They're privileged and they have access to medical tools in their normal day-to-day life that no one else or only really professional athletes have access to. And I understand why people are angry. I'm angry that I said on my last podcast, like I was with Rudy Gobert for a couple minutes or after a game on Friday at the Sloan Conference, and I had an immediate panicked response. Like, I want to get tested. And I was told, yeah, dream on. Like, you have no chance. Mm-hmm. You're not getting a test. Okay. I guess I'll just see what happens. And like, I get it. Like, it's criminal. It's unjustifiable that people can't get tested. But, you know, NBA teams, if they want to pay for it, pay for it. It's wrong. It's a symptom, to use a really bad word right now, of a system that is screwed up. But if you can get tested, I guess. I mean, my head is too addled to mount a staunch, you know, political analysis of the testing, honestly.
Well, again, though, it's a good way that sports, and I'm a big believer in this. I think there are so few places where we have national conversations these days. You know, gone are the days where, like, however many million Americans watch the finale of MASH. Like, we don't do that anymore. We don't watch the same TV shows. We don't watch the same movies, right? You know, not everybody goes to their religious service on Sunday. Like, not everybody votes. Like, there's just so few places where you can say, yeah, everybody's here having this conversation at once. And we know sports is one of those places. Look at the numbers. The top 10 live, you know, events on TV are sporting events. I mean, this is what people watch and talk about. Everybody watches the Super Bowl. So it is the place to have it. And if it has to be over Kevin Durant and the Brooklyn Nets, and that is where it hits home for people to really say, well, whose fault is it that we're not seeing more tests, or that, hey, guess what? To your point, there's a huge disparity in how much medical care and access people in this country have to begin with based on what their jobs are and whether they even have a job, having health insurance through your job, you know, and now we're seeing so many people get laid off en masse during this crisis. Do they have access to health care? It is a way to talk about all of this. The conversation that sprung up in the first couple days after the NBA shutdown about paying hourly workers, right? It was a big topic of conversation about the people who come to the stadiums and only
pay them
paid,
all. Pay
right?
them all. You have a billion. Right? You have billions, literal billions of dollars.
Yes.
So much money that you could not spend it all in 10 lifetimes if you tried. Well, I suppose you could buy. You could just buy failing companies left and lose all your money, but you're not going to do that. Pay the workers. Pay all of them. Pay them as long as it takes. And by the way, we're going to talk about this. It could take a very, very long time.
Well, it's funny. This is a sidetrack. I mean, I was going to say it's a good way to have a national conversation on how we pay hourly workers in this time of crisis. But yes, to your point, I was surprised. There were some of our colleagues who were very quick to defend the NBA owners on give them a month to get a plan together or that kind of thing. When you are a billionaire, literally, and half of NBA owners are billionaires, it is a penny out of your pocket to just commit sight unseen, without doing a study, without drawing up a plan, that you're going to pay out hourly workers for the last 20 games of the season. It is nothing. It requires no thought in terms of what it would be to you or me. So the fact that we did have some owners, literally the night that the NBA shut down, Mark Cuban got up in front of a bunch of people and said, I'm going to pay everyone.
Good
I was thrilled with that. And there was, by the way, there was many, many other NBA owners who did the same thing. So we shouldn't just assume that they're not. Many did. And those have all come out in the news. But they all should. And anyone who's sort of sitting out there saying, hey, you know, why are we leaping down anyone's throats that they're not doing it? If you are a billionaire, I promise you, do the math. Paying those hourly workers for the last 20 games on the schedule for the nights they would have worked anyway is less than a penny out of your pocket compared to what the average citizen has. And it's something you can do, you know, in a split second without having to draw up a plan.
Can I give you a tip, Rachel?
Please.
The 6 feet thing on the jump. I haven't watched the jump yet today. we're still figuring out how the television works in this house. Matt Barnes and Paul Pierce have long wingspans. That's all I'm just like, just keep like when they reach out, just you got to give like nine feet.
We're like a kindergarten class here. Keep your hands to yourself. You know, don't touch anyone, that sort of thing. It's funny. It is weird how easy it is to fall into all of that. Have you noticed that?
Being paranoid?
Well, yeah. Is that really something you've fallen into recently, Zach? Come on.
I did when we were packing up the car 2 days ago, I had to take an elevator up and down. And I did have this moment. It's obvious. Many people have made this observation, but like, when the elevator came to my floor and there was somebody in it, I was like, I don't want to get in that elevator. And then I did anyway. And then you think of like how many people have pressed this button. Then you go to Dwayne Reed and you like hand your debit card, like things you never thought about before. And like, this is how like some extreme germophobes or some people who suffer from OCD, this is their life every day. Like it's horrible. So anyway, your mash thing, the communal thing, not to get personal, but why not? What the hell else are we going to do? One of the reasons it hurt me a little bit more to leave was, you know, I live in Long Island City, which is a neighborhood in Queens. And it's the first place I've ever lived in New York that felt like a neighborhood in the sense that you know lots of people there personally. And that's mostly an accident because a lot of young families live there. And so because of your kids, you become friends with people. So I lived in Manhattan, all over Manhattan for, I don't know, 10, 12 years. I never knew a neighbor. I never walked down the street and thought I'm going to run into someone. Now in Long Island City, I walk out my door and I know if I go 2 blocks to the grocery store, I am going to run into someone I know and have a pleasant conversation. And more than that, my daughter is going to run into 25 people she knows and 5 dogs that she knows. And we're going to stop and talk to all those people. And it was such a warm, embracing thing and something I had never felt before, something I didn't think was possible in New York. And I'm sure there are other neighborhoods in Brooklyn or wherever where people feel this. And then one by one, all of those people left and you get the farewell text. Hey, we're going to West Virginia. Hey, we're going to Maine. Hey, we're going. You're like, man, I don't know where I'm going to see these people again. Like we built a neighborhood here or the neighborhood sprouted up around us. And now I don't know when I'm going to see any of those people again. It's a sensation that frankly, I'm not really emotionally equipped to deal with because I'm an emotional child and I don't deal well with big things like this, but it hits me in a way that I didn't expect.
Yeah. And family too. Your family's in Connecticut, right?
Yeah, so they are on the way from New York to where we're living now, and we stopped at their house to pick up my mom's car because once we return this rental car, we're going to need a car. And she had stocked it with toys for my daughter and other things, and we said, you know, we're gonna wave at each other through the windows because both my parents are in their 70s, and you can't be around them. And so that was the original plan, but then they stepped out of the front door and onto their little mini, you know, porch thing. And we were down below them in the car, which is on like a sunken driveway. And we just waved to each other and shouted at each other from 20 feet away. Cause I'm not getting in within 10 feet of them. And it was this weirdly, like FaceTime doesn't feel distant because it's just part of our daily lives. Like we FaceTime, we Skype, whatever it is. This felt more distant than FaceTime because I wanted to embrace them. I wanted them to be able to embrace me. And even as I'm saying this now, I'm getting choked up. And you couldn't help but think, when am I going to be able to do that again? When am I going to be able to be in their house again? It was like I didn't expect any of this. I thought, we'll go, we'll get the car, we'll say, hey, how you doing? Don't stay in the house. You know, generation, whatever people that are underestimating this, stay in the house. And it hit me like a ton of bricks.
I mean, look, these are the people who took care of us, right? The people who raised us. And now it is all of our job to take care of them. That's the bottom line.
Can I tell you a story about my dad?
Please.
My dad is a Hall of Fame swimming and water polo coach. He's been doing that for like 40 years. Our high school teams are juggernauts in both sports. And so this year, I don't want to use the word stubborn, but he is 77 years old. A little stubborn. That's fine. This year, his swim team, he said, is the best team he's ever had, which is like crazy because we just demolish everybody all the time. And so their state championship meet, which was scheduled for 2 days from now, was canceled weeks ago, understandably, right? And so he crafted a plan because even though the state championship meet is not going to be competitive, we're going to destroy everybody. The state championship meet is when your taper peaks, when you shave, And when you go for like, we're going to go for national records. We're going to go for like all American times. And so they were robbed. The best team he's ever coached was robbed of that. So genius, stubborn dad comes up with an idea. 2 weeks ago now, he's coming up with this idea. We're going to host, in lieu of that, a state sanctioned meet that's going to count at our home pool for just family and friends and the swim team. And I'm like, no, like this is a week ago. I'm like, dad, you can't do that. He's like, well, this is going to be maybe 50 people, 60, whatever the CDC. No. And I was like, dad, I am going to call whoever is sanctioning this and tattle on you so that you cannot do this. And I did not have to do that. Finally, the school canceled it. But that's just one sort of peek into the life of making sure the elders behave. Not that you just stay away from them, but you have to make sure they behave too.
Very important.
Tired of that 2:30 feeling? You're not alone. In fact, research shows that more than 70% of us hit the wall after lunch. Let a 5-hour energy shot help you leap over that wall instead of crashing into it. 5-hour energy helps you get through your crazy, not so much on the go anymore life. With zero sugar, 4 calories, and a convenient portable size, it's the perfect pick-me-up for busy, hardworking people. Now it comes in 2 great extra strength tropical tastes. Ooh, strawberry banana and tropical burst. They are delicious and can take you to a tropical on-the-go experience. Try them both and go online. Shop the number 5hourenergy.com and use the code LOW, L-O-W-E, my name, the name of this podcast, to receive a one-time offer of 10% off your order. That's go to shop 5hourenergy.com and use the code LOW to receive a one-time offer of 10% off 5-hour energy, energy on the go. What was your big takeaway from talking to Adam yesterday? What did he say that surprised you? What did he say that stuck with you? What was the question you were most nervous to ask him, or whatever? Whatever was the takeaway for you?
Well, most of my questions were legitimate quests for information. There's so much that we didn't know about what the NBA is thinking and what they're doing and what they're dealing with, that there was a bunch of stuff that was just getting information. And I thought that he was, you know, he's been so great in these moments of crisis. And he is a commissioner who in some way was born as a commissioner into crisis, right? First 6 months dealing with Donald Sterling. And there've been several big things to navigate, but this
by the way, just to interrupt you on that, this whole season can just f*** all the way off, all of it, from Daryl Morey's tweet to Kobe to Stern to this. Just, I want to wash it out of my system completely and start fresh, like whatever months. This whole season has been, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, and the thing that we were hoping to get out of it, which would have been probably one of the more competitive playoff tournaments we've seen in a while, right, where we didn't feel like we knew who was going to win at the end, we might not get that either. So, yes, 100%. But, yeah, I mean, this is a guy who, in my mind, really excels in these kinds of situations. He's thoughtful. He's reasoned. He's great at thinking out permutations of things. And he's transparent and has shown real leadership again and again. And I felt like he showed that in that interview at several points. The thing that surprised me most was that he brought up when I asked him what kinds of things they were thinking about going forward. And, you know, one thing he said was playing games without fans, or one thing was this, or one thing was that. Of his three prongs, the third prong he brought up was playing some sort of charity event that involved top-level NBA players, just so that the country can have some basketball and the players who apparently are blowing up his phone, according to him, can have a place to play. And he went into, in his explanation of that, that he understands that that would require some sort of quarantining, right? And having a central location. And you start thinking about it. And on the one hand, it seems a little crazy, right? Could you actually do it? Could you put a bunch of players in isolation, have them tested, have them live in isolation or train in isolation, and then have a tournament or have some sort of, you know, round robin? On the other hand, if you said to players in the NBA, hey, totally voluntary or not, do you want to do this? It's going to take a month of your time. You're going to have to go away from your families, and we will find a hotel or resort or something where everybody will live for a month, and we'll quarantine you for the first 2 weeks and then play games for the second 2 weeks. I bet you'd get 25 guys who would do it. Don't you think? If you're looking at 3 months of away from being away for basketball, or possibly more. So that whole idea surprised me, and maybe it's just too complicated to work. Because obviously it involves so many steps with taking into mind public and player health. But the fact that they're even thinking that way, was something I had not heard in any of the reporting, and I thought was super interesting, and something that shows us that, you know, the NBA is going to continue to try to be a leader here.
Whatever they can do, I'm all for it. Whatever they can do safely, like that's awesome. Fine.
Did you hear about the Big Three, by the way?
Yeah, the Big Three is doing like an all quarantine league. It just Chris Haynes just broke this news like 30 minutes ago or something. I'll watch it. Like, I got nothing else to watch. I'll watch it. Like, I just hope everyone, again, like, just you read more and more studies of, you know, we initially, this is a virus that really attacks the elderly. Yeah, every virus does. Like, there are more and more stories of people of our age and younger that are having severe reactions to this. I just hope everyone is safe. Like, this thing is no, I mean, we all know now, right? Like, this thing is no joke. This is not something to be trifled with.
Yep. Absolutely. And, you know, the way the Big Three is talking about it is a limited pool of players and having them all live in a house together. So it is a combo reality show / quarantine. And, you know, it's going to be interesting. Maybe it's going to be like your dad's water polo meet or his swimming meet. Like, it might get shut down before it starts. It'll be interesting to see what feels feasible to both, you know, an audience and also to health officials.
Speaking of living in a house together, I read a tweet and nothing more. And by the way, a lot of my sentences are now this week starting with, I read a tweet and nothing else from that tweet. But sure. about it, like, the Big Brother cast apparently is like, the show is going on right now and they have no idea that this is happening or something like that. That I might actually watch Big Brother, or at least the final episode where they come out of Big Brother and like, oh, a global pandemic has shut down Earth for a while. I might actually watch that. I'm looking for things to watch. I frankly, it was interesting. Last Friday, my wife and I rented Knives Out because, you know, I need to catch up on all my movies.
Yes, I do. I've been recommending that to you for months, by the way.
You have. And it was a hit.
I told you it was a Vesna movie, though. I told you you weren't allowed to see it on your own.
It came and this is now 5 days ago. At that moment, it kind of felt like, all right, we're just going to do this for a while. Now it's gotten so much worse that I don't even really want to watch anything anyway. It's just weird how quickly, things have changed. Yeah. I don't know. No one knows what's going to happen. So I personally remain skeptical that we are going to have a 2020 NBA champion. I know from talking to executives all over the league, at all levels, that the NBA is determined to do absolutely whatever it can to have a postseason, that the revenue is just too big, even without fans, even with best of three series, even with games in August or so, whatever it is, that they will do whatever they can and stretch it out to however they can to have a 2020 NBA champion. So if that's the case, then maybe I'm wrong. I just read all these timelines and all these reports, and maybe it's a mistake to read anything because all it does is keep me up at night. I just don't see how we get there on a timeline that doesn't then impact next season so severely that you're just looking at a time crunch that when you consider the draft and free agency, and most people I talk to think they won't have a draft until the season is over, whenever that is. And so you just start, I mean, who knows? Again, I don't know if that's true. That's just what people think. That's just what they've heard. That's, no one knows. But I've been telling people, and I've had conversations with GMs who agree with me, who don't agree with me. If you gave me like seven different outcomes, right? And said, you have to bet on one of these, and they are no fans, games with no fans, some games with fans, whatever it is. I'm reluctantly, because I don't like to bet on everything. It's an uncertain world, as Adam Silver told you last night. It's a fool's errand to try and predict anything. But if you force me to bet, I'm betting my money on no 2020 NBA champion. I hope I'm wrong, but that's just, if you force me to bet, that's where my head's at.
Well, part of it is figuring out what the NBA wants to prioritize, right? So if they want to prioritize finishing the season above all else, then however much it pushes back next season is less of a priority, right? So those dominoes don't fall if they're not as important. I have heard, as you have, that is one of their top priorities, is finishing the season. Part of it is revenue-based. So much of the league runs on the revenue that comes in during the playoffs. And some of it is just history-based and having that feeling of wanting to have a champion, wanting to finish this year, wanting to be able to have, you know, the record books stand the way they do. We've had seasons that began late, but certainly none that have just stopped in the middle. And the idea of preserving that in some way and having that be, you know, the NBA goes on, that kind of thing seems to be important to some of the people that I talk to. If that is your biggest priority, then yeah, even if you didn't start again until July or August and you were willing to push back the season. And by the way, there are advocates within the NBA who have wanted the season to change anyway. It's been a huge topic of a conversation, right? Should they cut down to 70 games? Should they cut down to 68 games? Should the season start as the Atlanta Hawks CEO wanted to do, December 25th, right? Yeah. Christmas. These might be opportunities for things that would have had a real uphill battle getting, quote, tested, right? Or tested in the W or tested in the G League. They're now going to get tested in real time in the NBA, and some of them might stick. We'll have to see what happens. So it just kind of depends to me on what their priority is. The only other thing I'm looking at, because again, so much is uncertain, is what is happening in Asia right now, because they are, of course, what, 6 weeks, 2 months ahead of us. In some cases, 3 months ahead of us. And they are starting up the Chinese Basketball Association again in the coming weeks. And they're calling players back and they are planning to play these games without fans, in Wuhan province, the place where all of this originated. And they had such an explosion of cases that they literally closed the province off to the rest of China. You could not go in or out of the border. They have had their first days with zero new cases where their curve is flat and they're on the other side of it. So, you know, that doesn't mean it's going to go down that way here. We are a bigger country, and by all accounts, we are a little less prepared and less willing to marshal our resources to provide the hospitals with what they need. So maybe that won't be an example to us, but at least it is something to look at and saying that there is a model that basketball is coming back. And until we get there, it's not necessarily that it's going to be done.
Well, this may be breaking news to you, but I am not a scientist or a healthcare expert. However, I have talked to some of those people of late.
I'm not a doctor, but
yes, I have read some of their reports to the best of my ability. I have talked to people within the league who have talked to those people. And the comparison of each nation's response to this is very interesting.
Fascinating,
and,
right?
And one of the things that, you know, China is putting out these numbers right now about no new cases, this and that. If you read some of these reports, including the Imperial College one that has really sort of struck a chord in the expert community, mm-hmm. They are curious about what happens now. Like, is there a second wave of this? Is there a third wave of this? They're skeptical that, like, problem solved. And one of the lines, the terrifying line from that report is they talk about how if you really want to minimize, pain in the U.S., from this virus, here are the measures that you have to take. And it's essentially like the most severe possible closing of all society for a prolonged period of time. Mm-hmm. And here's the line: to avoid a rebound in transmission, like new cases, or like a wave of new cases, to avoid a rebound in transmission, these policies, the policies I'm talking about, no school, no work, no anything, no whatever, these policies will need to be maintained until large stocks of vaccine are available to immunize the population, which could be 18 months or more. Mm-hmm. And I read things, again, nobody knows, not even the experts who wrote that report. They will all concede in the summary and discussion of that report that they don't know. We don't know what's going to happen. But if that proves accurate, if you have to either risk a second or third wave or have policies that are that stringent and last for that long, like, we need to start thinking not about, okay, we're going to restart in June or July or what the final's going to look like. We need to start thinking about, like, there is a possibility, like, none of us have a summer. No one gets to go to the beach in the summer. What does that do to next season? Where are we as a world in a year? Is the NBA back in any sort of form that we know about, that we're familiar with 20,000 fans and this kind of media attention, all that? Does that exist in 6 months or 8 months? Like, the medium term, no one is paying attention to, because this is evolving so much day to day, and every day there's so much news that's, like, terrifying and shocking. But the medium term is like strange and uncertain, and I don't know that we're guaranteed, like, any NBA. I don't know. Like, I just don't know.
Yeah. And look, obviously there's more important parts of American life. You know, the election is supposed to be in 6 or 7 months. You've seen states right now postponing primaries. You know, is there going to be a move by one of the parties to postpone the national presidential election? Is there going to be a move to have the presidential election because of all of this? You know, I just saw that the governor of New Jersey enacted a moratorium that people cannot be kicked out of their houses for not paying their rent, or there can be no foreclosures. I don't know how many states are going to enact that. Are we going to be dealing dealing with people who no longer have access to jobs and no longer have access to healthcare and now no longer having access to homes. I mean, there's so many big, huge issues that the country is grappling with. On the one hand, it doesn't make sense to talk about any of this at all. On the other hand, you have a lot, you know, when it comes to basketball or sports, but on the other hand, you have a lot of people sitting at home trying to find a lens to deal with all this through. And in some ways, sports or the NBA is their lens.
Yeah, I do feel like very soon we're going to reach a point at which chronicling the day-to-day of NBA news feels almost stupid. Like, yeah. This person, this team tested, and how did this team get tests, and what's the latest plan that they're pitching in the league office for saving the playoffs or X, Y, and Z? I just feel like in a week, like, am I really going to devote – or is anyone devoting mental and emotional energy to those questions? I just don't know. I'm scared I don't think so.
I think we are going to move. I agree. We're going to move away from that sort of day to day stuff, and it's going to move much more into being a Netflix version of sports, right? Let me call up that championship game. Let me go watch that movie again. Let me hear guys talk, you know, who are involved, talk about this game or something like that. It will be a much more featurey existence for the NBA. And again, some people are going to want that as an escape, and some people are going to be like, I'm not interested. I'm turning on my cable news the whole time. They released stats about cable news that I think, compared to this day last year, cable news shows are 75% up in ratings. But the flip side of that is that 12% of homes tuned into some sort of cable news in some way, CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, and yesterday. That means 88% of homes didn't, right? So that means there are people who clearly are interested in maybe turning the news off for some time or maybe all the time and just kind of being with their families and thinking and talking about things. If they can't control the big wide world up there, they want to control, you know, what movies they watch and what sports they see and things like that. And it is, you know, the old favorites that I think are going to come back a little bit more.
I wonder how an NBA Finals, I'm just making this up. Like, people say this is under discussion, that's under discussion. Everything is under discussion. Mm-hmm. You couldn't pitch a crazy enough idea for how to salvage, as Adam said last night, the NBA season that it hasn't been discussed yet, or yep. that they would refuse outright to discuss it. I just wonder, like, how a best of three NBA finals with no fans would feel. Like, would we get excited for that and then arrive at it and be like, boy, this sucks. This is disappointing. Would the players be like, would the players like feel inside themselves like, yeah, we're trying to win the championship, but it just doesn't like, it's like, I know deep down that this is going to be like I hate the word asterisk, but just like a championship that it's just not going to count the same. It's not going to be the same. I just wonder, as excited as we would be to have that experience and have basketball back, I wonder if it would almost have this sort of hollow, like the no fans, like that, the sound of it, the home court advantage of it, even though only rich people can go to the finals, like I don't know how it would feel, you know? There's part of me, I don't really actually mean this, but there is a part of me that's like, let's just move on to next season. It's cleaner. It's easier. But I don't really feel that, but there's like part of my soul that feels that a little bit.
Well, Adam was talking last night. He said that, look, he understands having games without fans seems like an anathema to so many people, exactly what you're talking about. But his point was, hey, technology allows us to do all sorts of things. He talked about American ingenuity and how things are invented in the time of crisis, and that 99% of NBA fans don't ever get to watch an NBA game live, that they are watching it on TV anyway. And he spit out there, he said, hey, maybe there's some technology that lets people, you know, cheer from their phone or their TV, and that gets broadcast into the arena, right? And then it's everybody, instead of having 20,000 fans in the arena, it's, you know, 200 million fans in the arena, so to speak, because that can get broadcast into the arena. He obviously, again, just throwing things out there, but I think if your standard is it going to feel the same? The answer is no. No, it will not feel the same. The answer is just no. Absolutely no. Nothing I think in this next year is going to feel the same, and maybe longer than that. I read that same report, 18 months. But will it be something that we will want? I think so. I think the bar is different, right, in a time like this. I think getting some sort of diversion and getting some sort of experience where you can have those familiar touchstones of seeing the faces, especially in the NBA where people feel so close to the players, right? There's no equipment. There's no masks. It's just, you know, these guys that you know on your wall. I think there will be people who will have an appetite for that, and it won't be the same, but it could be something new and different and something that still gives some people joy, and really we all need that a lot right now, I think.
I also think about teams that have major potential decisions ahead of them depending a little bit on how they look in the playoffs. And the obvious one is the Sixers, you know, with Simmons and Embiid. And I've said before that if they flopped in the playoffs this year, I don't think they would immediately pivot to like trade one of them, but you would be inevitably, it now goes on your whiteboard as something to revisit maybe in the next offseason. If you flop again, other changes there would surely be made. I think of Utah with big decisions ahead of them and other teams like that. And I'm like, so if you're the Sixers and you, what are you now? Sixth? You're sixth in the East, tied with Indiana, who I guess has the tiebreaker. I've lost track of all the freaking tiebreakers. Right. I don't care. I don't care anymore. And you play Boston in the first round of a best of three series coming off. I'm just, again, making this up. Five quick fix regular season games and zoom into the playoffs. Ben Simmons is maybe more recovered from his back injury than he would have, or his impingement, whatever it is. Right. But you fail. You lose 2-0. Your season's over. Like, are you rendering judgment based on that outcome versus what kind of runway and season you expect? I don't know the answers to these questions.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's so many permutations of what could lead to that. How many games are we talking about? Are we talking about a best of three or a best of five or a best of seven? How many rounds are we going? You know, at what point is Ben playing in those because of the time that his back will have healed? There's way too many questions to answer right now how the Sixers should judge that, but it's not too early to bring up the fact that those things are now up in the air when we used to think they were kind of certain. 2 weeks ago, I had people on the set saying Ben Simmons is probably not going to play another game this season. It just seems like the injury is bad enough and it's backs and people don't want to mess with the back and things like that. And now who knows? All of that could be out the window.
From what I heard, that was never the case, but it doesn't matter anymore. Mm-hmm. I also wonder like, this isn't part of the reason I'm a little bit skeptical is like, this isn't going away. I don't think like in July, a player or a coach or a trainer or a referee is still going to be testing positive for this and or exhibiting symptoms similar to what happened before the Jazz Thunder game and like instilling a sort of panic amongst people. Like, do you just sort of accept that and play around it? Like, okay, that guy can't play or do you get to a point where a positive test doesn't shut down the league again? Do you just learn to live with that and play? Or maybe there won't be any, I don't know. But from what I understand, like, I don't think you can just sort of count on, the positive testing going away. The other thing is like, for all the hoopla and uproar justified again, for reasons that we talked about the teams getting tested, like my general assumption is, I don't know what the players want. I don't know what the union wants yet. I don't know that they've gotten there yet. But my assumption, maybe it's dumb. You can tell me if it's dumb, has been that if they're going to restart the NBA, everyone is going to get tested. And maybe the testing availability will change to the point that that's not a big deal. But that maybe I'm just being naive. But like, if they're going to start playing games again, I assume maybe wrongly that everyone would get tested.
Well, that's I'm not a doctor, but right. So I'm not a doctor, but I listen to the people who are. Sanjay Gupta, I thought was really informative when he went on Turner's Inside the NBA show last week, and of course he's been great on CNN the last few days. One thing he said that caught my attention was, and he is a doctor, is that there is a point in any kind of epidemic or crisis where containment is no longer the chief goal. Where you just mathematically pass the point of containment, and then it just becomes in the ecosystem of American health or in global health, and then the focus is much more on treatment. And that is kind of all what about flattening the curve is about, right? Is that the idea that at some point many of us will get sick, you just can't all get sick at once, right? And that you know, there is a point where testing and containment just isn't the health strategy anymore. There are other health strategies of treating symptoms. And if you reach a point where not everyone is getting sick at once, those symptoms are more treatable because you have the resources and respirators and hospital beds and physicians to be able to care for those people. So I don't know what that point is. I don't even know, you know, I didn't know that that was part of the progress of an epidemic, but these are people who do this for a living. And apparently there is some point where testing and containment is not the primary way that you fight it. You fight it in other ways. And I don't know if getting to that point is part of where they feel they are in China and why they're restarting basketball or where we might get as a country as well.
Marathon gasolines are formulated with STP additives. They keep your vehicle running at peak performance by optimizing fuel economy, removing those ugly deposit buildups, and by reducing emissions. And right now, you can get 5 cents off every gallon every day with Make It Count rewards from Marathon. Plus, You can earn points for additional savings on fuel, airfare, hotels, and more. That is definitely a win-win deal. It's quick and easy to join. Just download the free Make It Count app or go to makeitcount.com/radio. So join the Marathon team and start saving today. This offer is valid only at participating Marathon stations. Remember, wherever your journey goes, it pays to start at Marathon. Marathon, fueling the American spirit. What's the NBA storyline that if the season is over and or so abbreviated that it feels like a fake season, where you feel like, you know, all teams have this sort of organic journey that they go on, sure. Right? So that where like internal storylines organically resolve themselves or whatever. What are the storylines that you feel yourself longing to be like, oh man, I feel like I watched a movie and I didn't watch the last 30 minutes where everything's going to be wrapped up or fall apart or end one way or another.
Well, it's funny. I mentioned it a few minutes ago. It's not knowing, right? So I love superhero movies because I'm a giant geek. So I watch every Marvel movie that comes out, every DC comic movie that comes out, every Star Wars, everything, all of that. And I watch it because I love those little worlds that they build. I love the characters. But I'm not kidding myself. In the Spider-Man movie, I know what happens at the end. Spider-Man is going to win. Like, that's how that works. And even, you know, even Avengers, they had a cliffhanger at the ending of one movie. But we knew how the next movie would go and how that cliffhanger would be resolved. So I think what sports offers us and what I always find so fascinating, one of the reasons I wanted to do this for a living to be my job, is that you don't know what's going to happen. Right? You have heroes and villains and storylines and epic clashes, and you don't know which team is Spider-Man and which team is his arch nemesis. You don't know that until the end. And in the NBA for the last 5 years, we didn't know for sure who was going to win, right? The Warriors didn't win every title, but we certainly had an idea of what was going to happen toward the end of the season. We had four straight finals where it was the two same teams. We knew who was going to be there. We knew who the odds were stacked against and what the most likely outcome was. And for a little bit, the NBA felt a little bit like one of those Spider-Man movies. I knew who was going to win. And for this season, I had no idea who was going to win. And I'm going to be so mad if I don't get the resolution of that, because it really is a movie that you don't know the ending to, and we're not going to get it. And that's the thing I'll miss the most.
You know what's good though? We can't be wrong. Like if I picked the Clippers to win the championship, I think the Clippers are the best team. If they don't win, I'll be like, well, it was just, you know, best of three fluke, because that doesn't count. Like, of course they were the best team. Let's just go down the line. Ready? Okay. Eastern Conference standings, Milwaukee. How does Giannis look in the playoffs? I suspect that a lot of the is the MVP race a race talk, mm-hmm. with which I disagree. I don't really want to get into an MVP thing because I don't care right now. Mm-hmm. I think Giannis is the MVP, mm-hmm. but I think a lot of the race is this a race talk stems from, in some voters' mind, this sort of lingering feeling that LeBron's game translates better to the playoffs or will translate better to the 2020 playoffs than Giannis's game. And that sort of just colors everyone's perception of them as players, even though every indicator says that one player has played better than another player this mm-hmm. season. And by the way, I don't think that's crazy or wrong to factor that into your voting, because you can't help it. And because that actually does matter, if you want to translate or like, I understand it's a regular season award, but if you think that and there is reason to think that LeBron's a multi-time champion, Giannis is not. Like, there are obvious reasons to think his game translates a little more cleanly to the postseason than Giannis's, even though Giannis has a chance to prove that wrong. And that was the fun part that I missed. Like, I think that's informing a lot of the perception that this is a close MVP race. And I don't think that's crazy or wrong. And just not getting a full shot of seeing Giannis be able to do that is one of the things I will miss. Do you want to add anything, or do you want me to go right down my list?
Well, you don't even have to get that far in the how would their games be in the playoffs. Like, you had another 20 games of the season left and Giannis got hurt and we thought it was a minor knee sprain, right? But what if it turned into something more serious? If Giannis missed the final 20 games of the season,
then it's a race. LeBron wins.
So there you go. Like that, like, it doesn't have to be some complicated, how do you factor that in? Is it fair and postseason and this season and whatever? We didn't know how those final, I don't remember, 18 games that the Bucks had left, whether Giannis was going to play in them or not. And that was a real thing because he missed the last two. So to me, that is sort of where that great unknown of the MVP race is. Because I agree with you. Giannis is my leader in the clubhouse, but we've still got a quarter of a season to go. And Giannis missing that last quarter of the season would have been impactful, I think, on the race and on people's votes, don't you?
I do. I do. Toronto, I have not been this excited to watch a team defend its title than the Raptors.
Yes. Oh my God. How much fun have they been?
And I don't think they would have won. I do think they had a puncher's chance to come out of the East. As I've said that before, one of my last podcasts before all this happened was about the Bucks and how I do think the Bucks will win the East, but I don't think they're as sort of invulnerable as their record suggests. And I think Toronto is a legit – Toronto just has it. Like when you win, it really – they have a swagger and a toughness and just sort of like – I wrote this in a column a couple weeks ago. When you've been through it together and you can look around at everyone around you and say, I know that guy has it. In the fourth quarter of a championship game. I know that guy has it and that guy has it. And a toughness isn't just like, it's not just grit and physicality and like boxing out for rebound. It's knowing that I can follow. I have good instincts in the moment when I have a split second to decide whether to pass or cut or drive. And I'm going to make the right decision under pressure because I already did it. And I know that guy will and that guy will and that guy will. There's such a power. And that collective knowledge and confidence, and they have it. And I'm going to miss not seeing them. And you're right. They've been fun. Boston, Jason Tatum. How real is it? I think it's pretty real. How real would it have been in the playoffs? I mean, you could just go down the line of all this stuff.
Yeah.
I can keep going. Right. I got to Victor Oladipo. By the way, who the Pacers, I wrote this in a column after the trade deadline, the Pacers and Victor Oladipo broached the subject of a contract extension before the season and agreed, no, not now. Let's just put it off. So like, how does he look in the playoffs? How do they look in the playoffs? Sixers, we already got to Western Conference. I think LA, it had a chance to be so special,
right?
Like so special to the, right from the beginning. You live there. I don't. I visit often because of you. The Clippers right away leaned so hard into the anti-Lakers.
Of course.
And they can all downplay, oh, it's just a regular season game and blah, blah, blah. I know because I was out there in LA maybe 2 weeks before Christmas or a week before Christmas, and they both played separate games. Everybody on those teams would come up to you before and after the game and say, hey, I know we're publicly downplaying it. I can't wait for Christmas. I can't wait. And it would have been awesome. Go on. You pick something now. I'm sorry.
No. I think those were all good. Like, look, the LA thing too. I was fascinated to see the logistics of that, right? Because it would have been the first time if those teams had met in the Western Conference Finals, it would have been the first time we would have had two teams that share a building, right? I lived in New York. You lived in New York during the Subway Series. That was amazing with Major League Baseball.
It's my worst sports moment in history. Please don't bring that up.
I'm happy I could bring this up to you again. Come on, the Mets were in the World Series. How is that your worst moment?
Game one in the
World Series. That's by definition a good time.
Game one, Armando Benitez blowing that save, which every Met fan knew was going to happen. Okay, every Met fan knew that, and every Met fan knew when he blew that save, the series was over. I just felt it. That essentially ended a relationship for me because I was so angry and immature about it, and B. I've never been the same as a sports fan since that game. It gutted me to a degree. So thank you on my own podcast for bringing this up.
I feel bad
freaking
for the
Armando. You should feel bad.
For the girlfriend that got dumped because of the Mets. Come on.
I don't even really know who dumped who. It just, there was just no one could, once that moment happened of like a 22 year old man or something storming out of a room. Like a child and slamming the door, cursing about the Mets and how he hates the, like you, there's just no going back from that. There's just nothing to be done anymore.
Well, I will say that while that was for people who might not have been Mets fans, that was a cool series to be able to see the Yankees and Mets playing each other. And we've had things like that before, not in the same building, right? So the idea that you would have in the same building, the Lakers and Clippers going at it for the right to go to the NBA finals. And you've been in LA for those games that the Lakers fans buy up the Clippers seats. So on the one hand, neither team has to travel. They're in their home locker rooms. They're around their families. They have all the creature comforts of the workouts they like to do. There's not that like cramped visitor's locker room in Boston or any of those other cities that kind of purposely make the visitor's locker room unpleasant. But then they would go out on the court. And if you're the Clippers, are you playing in effect seven away games? no matter whether they're covering up the banners above you or not, no matter whether it's technically whose cheerleaders get the stage, the fans in the building, I could not have waited to see what that would have looked like, because I don't think we will have seen anything like it.
Is Ballmer going to fight someone? Like in game five, when it's 2-2 and something bad happens to the Clippers, is he just going to fight a fan, like a Laker fan? I don't know. And by the way, people who hear our excitement about LA will immediately say you're discounting everyone else in the West. Two things on that. Number one, those teams I think have proven head and shoulders above everybody else in the West. The default assumption should be that that is the conference finals. Number two, that doesn't mean I'm any less excited for any of the following things. Can Denver get it together after a shaky season for essentially everyone on the team but Jokic and kind of Will Barton?
Mm-hmm.
Utah has had the strangest season of every good team in the NBA. Up, down, Conley starting, injured, off the bench, starting again. And they've just and then they go on a four-game losing streak, then a four-game winning streak right before this all shut down. They finally had a bench unit that started to produce and make sense. Are they going to get it together? Now they have all other sorts of chemistry questions to answer.
Get to the Thunder. I want to see that one.
Well, that's Oklahoma City. Are they just going to just have this pride of, oh, we're not even supposed to be here. Like, we were the throwaway team. Everyone was going to get traded. Guess what? A, we're good. B, we're tough as shit. The last game I saw in the NBA this year was Thunder at Celtics on the Sunday, whatever that was, March 10th or March 8th or so, whatever, some day that existed. And the Thunder came back from double digits in the third quarter, the second quarter. The Celtics went on one of those runs that home teams go and you're like, okay, it's over. That's the game. And they came back to win. Chris Paul had that stop on Tatum late in the game. And like a bunch of just like, man, that dude's a pain in the ass. Chris Paul played. Like he got an offensive rebound and a free throw late in the game. And I turned to Hollinger behind me and I said, whoa, that guy is like, and I love Chris. I love everything about Chris
in the most admiring way. Right.
And they have no expectations. So they go in, whoever they face in the first round is going to have.
What if they were going to play the Rockets in the first round? That was certainly on the table. That would have been interesting with Chris Paul going up against Russ and James Harden.
Whether it's them or Denver or Utah, forget the LA teams for a second. Oklahoma City, a team riding on free money, found money, is going to face a team that put a lot into trying to win this year and maybe beat them. And that's fun as hell, right?
Yep. I mean, there's so many things that this is why so many people in the NBA want to at least finish something, right? Because there's so many questions left unanswered and so much more for guys who feel like their stories aren't written yet. One thing that Adam brought up to me again in this interview last night is he said that there are players competing against Father Time, which is a battle we know no one has won. So when you talk about part of you says, oh, cancel the season, start again, you know, next year, maybe it's in 2 years, maybe it's 18 months, whatever it is that the health, you know, providers are telling us in this moment. There are players where that is effectively going to end their careers. And the most dramatic is, of course, Vince Carter. We saw him in the final minutes, right?
That was awesome.
At that three.
Awesome.
It was incredible. And maybe, you know, gosh, I know he didn't get the like Dwayne Wade-esque, you know, planned tribute final game where you could know about it 3 days going into it and all of that. But just the moment and the organic nature of everybody standing and clapping and then him making the shot was so incredible. So that's the most dramatic, right? But then think about some of the players from these great draft classes that we've had, that we are the elder statesmen of the league, who we know only have two or three more years left. We were just talking about Chris Paul. How much more would Chris Paul be playing? Where this is a huge chunk of the end of his story, and he might not get it.
Yeah, and I don't know if Vince really wanted the hoopla. I think that was part of the lingering, like Vince not being our presence at All-Star, I think was indicative of that. Yeah, and you brought the race for the eighth seed, Luka and Porzingis together in the playoffs for the first time. What the hell are the Rockets going to end up being? Again, another up and down team. But these are all just us searching for creature comforts amid a much, much bigger thing. And
I guess for me, I don't think having a 20-minute conversation about fun stuff about basketball and gee, we only saw Zion play however many 18 games or whatever it was. And what do you think that could be if he gets a full season? It's okay to have 20 minutes of that conversation. It doesn't mean that you don't care about people getting sick or, I don't think people can spend 24 hours a day only thinking about the things that make you anxious, I think it's okay to watch movies. And I think it's okay to talk about sports, and all the while keeping the perspective that we know what's important. And what's most important is that the people on the front lines of this, our health providers, the people have what they need. We can't predict the future. We can't predict what this virus is going to do. Unfortunately, you know, they just have not been able to save every life. But there is a difference between the countries that have armed the doctors and nurses with the tools they need to make people better. And as long as we can do that and move toward that, it's okay to also watch a movie. That's my thing, you know.
And I hope, I just hope, obviously there's, I hope everyone is okay and everyone stays safe and as few people suffer from this virus as possible. I also, just the mental effects that this is going to have on people are scary. Yeah. And the isolation and forget the mental effects linked to the economic disaster that is coming. And just, you know, like I think of my daughter, like how much development is she missing? How can I fix that? You know, how it's just like there are just, it's, and just the anxiety people feel, crippling 24/7 anxiety about their parents and their loved ones. That's going to take a toll on people's health. It's just, I just hope everyone does their best to ride this out and be okay. Cause it's scary and I don't know what else to say, really.
Well, you and me did not live through the Great Depression. We did not live through World War II. So we just have not grappled with something that we don't know what the end is. We don't know how this is going to happen. We do know that society came out of both of those things. That's hopeful that society will come out of this. And we do have some of the modern comforts that people in those times didn't have. You mentioned FaceTiming with your parents and having them have the ability to see their grandchild. That's just not something that would have existed, you know, 20 years ago.
She very enthusiastically gave them a virtual tour of the new, the rental house. Like, do you want to see my bedroom? Do you want to see my bedroom? Do you want to see the Lego thing that Daddy and I built? It was really nice.
This is kindergarten cribs, right?
Yeah, basically. You want to see the trampoline? That's where Daddy and I bounced on the trampoline. Yeah. Okay. Rachel, thank you for your time. Your reporting throughout this has been invaluable, and I'm sure will continue to be invaluable. I miss you. I want to come out to LA. I just wish we could fast forward to a time where we can just do a jump and have it be
normal.
Have it be BS or real talk and have fun. But I want you and everyone listening, just be safe, and everyone's family, you know, be okay and be good to each other. No more negativity, no more nastiness on Twitter, no more nastiness in real life. Everybody be good to each other. Everybody be nice to each other, and everybody be safe. That's all.
Amen.